Okay, let's keep going here. What I'd like to do is entertain public comment on the three proposals that have been presented to the board. Okay. Claudine Reynolds and Kim Miller.
Thank you, Chairman and Board. It's a pleasure to be before you again today. For the record, my name is Claudine Reynolds. I'm the manager of the Wildlife and Fisheries Program at Port Blakely. As part of my job, I work with the company on all matters affecting fish and wildlife habitat and conservation. I have 17 years experience working with fish and wildlife species and their habitats, and for the past 13 years, water taking has been a core function of my team. I acknowledge the big decision we have before you today to determine the best path forward in regards to determining PHB options. A lot of smart, passionate people have been working on this issue for a very long time, and there's been significant thought corralled to get us where we are today. Most recently, I want to thank the science panel for their efforts to establish meaningful recommendations, given the challenge they've had with the data. A lot of that you've heard about over the last 2 days, so I'm not going to go into that. I want to start out by saying, over the course of my career, I've surveyed hundreds of miles of stream to determine the maximum distribution of headwater fish. And one thing that I've learned is that many streams do not have obstacles or barriers to clearly define the upper extents of this fish use. I know that is one of the reasons that we're here today, but I'm mentioning this to stress that judgment calls will have to be made. And although clear guidance is very important, it can't nor shouldn't take the place of the professional training experience that goes in to be able to make those decisions in the field. In regards to PHBs, I believe that if our collective interest is in classifying each stream accurately to ensure that the correct conservation measures are being applied to protect those streams, then we need a solution that is site-specific and scalable to each stream. We can achieve this goal by implementing a repeatable set of methods while utilizing specific criteria designed to yield the most accurate outcome on a stream-by-stream basis. A ratio approach to determining the PHB would allow the physical characteristics of each stream to be assessed with the context of its size in mind. The fourth recommendation in the science panel report, test 15, suggests a 5% change in gradient or a 20% reduction in stream size. This recommendation meets the scalable criteria with the most meaningful consideration being a gradient inflection. I say this because I think that gradient is more of an inhibitor to fish movement than stream size. Stream size is very important, but it is used as a proxy to characterize the true change, which is pool frequency in water. Furthermore, the exact metric to characterize the size change was not able to be extracted from the data due to the discontinuous nature of how it was collected and reported, as talked about yesterday. All that being said, for any PHBs that are considered for rule, it will be very important to follow up with a validation and adaptive management process. In addition to adopting a scalable method of determining a PHB, I think it would be valuable to address the concern about the core anadromous zone. By working cooperatively to establish criteria that ensures anadromous fish are not being inadvertently underestimated in their distribution. This would serve to benefit the species, our rich local culture, and by extension contribute to a healthier planet. Lastly, I believe that a spatial analysis of any proposed PHBs or alternatives should be put through a spatial analysis starting right away as recommended in the WFPA proposal. I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you, Claudine.
So you mentioned the using the ratio as a scalable and appropriate. So can you talk a little bit about the difference between that and just the plain, like the straight gradient approach, to either, you know, and or so there's a 10% gradient threshold, and then there's the inflection with a change in 5%. So and I would have asked Hans or anybody else, but you know, you're up here and you're articulate and explain things well. So like when you're in the stream, what's the difference between using those methods and what does that look like?
So basically you're always gonna start a stream survey at known fish. Mm-hmm. And so when you're looking for something that would be a change in a habitat feature as you're moving up a stream, you're looking for, I'm not looking for a specific gradient, like when it hits 10%. Now I'll be able to change, and any of us would be able to change our techniques and protocols, but because of the way it's going right now, it's working really well. We are actually looking for a defined feature in the stream that is meaningful biologically. And so it's, you're simply looking for a change in characteristics, a change in physical features. So it's not as simple as looking for a specific metric out there in the stream, like when you hit a 10% or you hit a 15% or you hit a 2 feet wide. There's so many more variables involved, which is why I stress the importance of training. But when you're looking at what could possibly be altering or inhibiting fish movement, you're looking to characterize a physical feature in the stream, and a ratio is more intuitive and easier to, I think, measure as far as characterizing a change in the stream. Does that make sense? Was that as articulate as you could have thought it was?
I know that as well.
Ken?
Thank you. Tough act to follow. Mm-hmm. Chairman Bernath and members of the board, I'm Ken Miller, competently representing thousands of small forest landowners that are unable to comprehend this whole PHB and FM debate over the last decade and most of yesterday and again today. Whatever the end result, I hope you understand and agree that the small business economic impact must recognize the disproportionate impact of such complexity. Technical assistance to actually do stream typing for small should be a minimum requirement if we continue to make these processes ever more complex. Smalls tend to be in the lower watershed with flatter ground, most likely to be disproportionately impacted by whatever you do, the areas that Jim Peterson and the rest of them just talked about. Portions of our land were likely a matrix of small stream channels and wetlands used by fish before the European settlers cleared the timber and dug drainage ditches. Some of these drainage ditches are often still used by fish, but the original fish habitat has been changed. Ever-increasing regulatory and complexity increases the likelihood these lands will be converted again to highest and best use housing developments. We have to remember that we're not dealing in a vacuum, just looking at regulations. There are other things that affect it. Even if you do clearly understand all this and could actually apply current or new prescription on the ground yourselves, we appreciate you putting yourself in our shoes during your deliberations. We presume you will have the opportunity to deal with these small landowner issues later in the rulemaking process if you go there. I wanted to add, after hearing Jim, Ed, that Smalls came to the table and supported forest fish primarily because we thought we were supporting salmon and the tribal's legacy about continuing to fish and their heritage. The disconnect or room for compromises around how much protection is appropriate for our smaller harvest and smaller streams, and of course living up to the forest and fish commitments to Smalls. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ken. I'm Kevin Gabu and Mary Spearlock.
Good morning, Chairman Bernath and members of the board. My name is Kevin Godbu and I represent the Weyerhaeuser Company. This is an important issue to Weyerhaeuser as it is to everybody in the room today. I think Chairman Bernath easily summed up where we are. This is about defining fish habitat and habitat is that is used by fish or likely to be used by fish, and that's kind of our mutual goal, and we're talking about the methods to get there, so I don't think the question's unsettled, it's just how you go about doing it. Clearly, there's a lot of energy on this issue that has been put forward to this matter, starting in 96 and actually in 87 with PFW, but now, once again, we're faced with another pivot point. And when we get to this pivot point today, we still have an awful lot of work to do. You need to do the cost-benefit analysis, the small business economic impact statements. We have to kind of assess the accuracy and balance. And I'm a big proponent of validation, but I think we should validate before we implement. And I think we have an opportunity this upcoming field season to, if we come up with some alternatives that make some sense, to go out and collect some data to just give us some ability to inform the board as we make these decisions, because just to go to a validation study, you know, pick an alternative 4 or 5 years later, we come back, it'll be another 20 years. So I think we have to kind of have a ready aim fire versus a ready fire and aim approach today. And so keep that in mind. And I'd also ask you to consider, if we're intentionally conservative and selecting alternatives, you will not necessarily be addressing kind of the economic viability of the industry. And so we've got to really balance the alternatives going forward, which I think, you know, gets to my main point here, which is, you know, you need to be inclusive today. We have a lot of folks that are, you know, participating in a lot of processes. I think with more time, we may be able to come up with a single alternative or a variety of alternatives. But much like the diversity of the individuals that are here caring deeply about this issue, we have diverse ecology out there. We have east side, we have west side, we have potential anadromous zones, we have upland areas, we have lowlands. There's a lot of things to consider, and it's not an easy approach. And I think as you kind of consider alternatives, please consider as many as possible. We've got three obviously very good ones. Maybe some of them can get blended over time. And that kind of approach is, you know, really consistent with the Administrative Procedures Act, to have a bunch of alternatives and then to kind of come up with some options as you go forward. And, you know, that reflects the TFW spirit that we've all had for a long time, which is to continue to, you know, work on alternatives to see if we can come up with an option. And consensus is hard and it takes a lot of time. And I think you can really see that the level of energy is here to do that. And I just close in saying that, being overly inclusive is really important because it makes everybody feel that they're part of the solution. And I'd also remember that if you're not part of the solution, you become the problem. So don't create more problems. We've got plenty of problems to work on. And so if someone walks out of here today feeling like their issue hasn't been adequately addressed and there's not a forum for them to participate, they're going to find another forum, and we're all going to be working in that one too. So I would hope that as we go forward, we kind of come up with a holistic approach, balance us out, kind of give us some more time, and hopefully we'll come up with, again, meeting that mutual goal of, you know, protecting fish habitat, maintaining economic viability. Thank you.
Chairman, Mary.
Good morning, Chair Bernath, members of the board. My name is Mary Spurlock, and as you know, I've represented the Conservation Caucus at TFW Policy for the last 5 years, which is a fraction of the time that this issue has been in the works. During that time and earlier in my career, I've become intimately familiar with both the strengths and the limits of collaboration and consensus in policymaking. The stream typing package you are duty-bound to complete, in our opinion, is the result of protracted negotiation and dispute resolution within the adaptive management program. But the issue before you today, the identification of potential habitat rate criteria, is solely your responsibility to resolve. In our view, the time for equivocation is over, and it's time to make some clear decisions. The Conservation Caucus urges the board to complete the stream typing package by accepting the West Side Tribal proposal as the single rule concept it will forward to formal rule and guidance development. We're not supporting this proposal as one alternative among others, but as the chosen alternative. And the reason I say that is because the alternative itself, as you heard from the West Side Tribes, is the subject of considerable compromise. And forwarding multiple alternatives would amount to an abdication in our view of the board's duty by kicking the can down the road, needlessly burdening staff with analysis of multiple proposals and vastly increasing the risk of delay in final rule adoption. Particularly, and it's not that we're against further analysis, if further analysis is a condition or a contingency of a rule being completed, and in fact filling in blanks forwarding alternatives that have blanks in them does not seem to us to be appropriate at this time. And the fear really is that the public, what we see would be lack of leadership and institutional dysfunction. I'd like to minimize that. There's some sound alternatives being proposed here today. The Westside Tribal proposal builds on alternatives tested by the science panel that makes important improvements that will reduce electrofishing under the FHAM by ensuring that electrofishing protocols are not used in areas that should be deemed fish-bearing and that obstacle definitions are strong enough to achieve the board's objectives. I refer you to the upcoming comments of expert Jamie Glasgow on the technical basis for the proposal and of Chris Mendoza. In supporting this alternative, we want to recognize and express our appreciation for the tribe's leadership in crafting and forwarding the proposal and for their esteemed status as co-managers of these important resources. As you will hear from Mr. Glasgow, this proposal represents substantial compromise on our part and by other stakeholders who are supporting it. This compromise integrates many landowner concerns and accepts substantially more electrofishing than my caucus would prefer. If it were to be accepted as but one alternative among others, the risk would be that it would be subject to further weakening. And I will, for the record, defer here to the Westside Tribe's statement today that they are deferring to the Eastside Tribes on the Eastside Tribe's selection of another alternative for the East Side. I want to remind you that the fish covered under this HCP also deserve regulatory certainty. The HCP covers over 85 fish stocks, most of which we never talk about. This board has already found that the current system does not provide them with a consistent, repeatable, enforceable stream pipe typing system that meets the plan's objectives for identification of fish habitat. We know that the FN breaks are not being consistently located or consistently documented, which we learned from the data exercise, and which this should come as no surprise because there is no requirement for this. The days of fish noses, Lenny memos, and fish plus, whatever the practitioner feels like providing, has got to end, and we hope that it will end today. It's not an end to professional judgment, but a clear framework for using it within reasonable limits. A critical component of the tribal proposal is the 10% floor. Again, we think that this needs to be identified. We heard confirmation from Dr. Roney yesterday that the concerns about the adequacy of a 5% up-down metric without such a floor are legitimate. We also point out that the obstacle definitions are reasonable improvements to the ones proposed by the panel, which were also based on best professional judgment, and that they also comport with the literature, expert judgment, tribal conservation, and WDFW technical information. We fear that the landowner proposal would take us backwards by deferring board decisions to further subsequent analysis, in addition to the insufficiency of the stream width ratio and obstacle criteria. We believe that the public process would still have room for more information and analysis, but that it should not be explicitly tied to the PHB alternative that you forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Jamie Glasgow, Ray Ants.
Good morning, Chair Burnett and board members. My name is Jamie Glasgow. I'm here representing the Conservation Caucus. As you've just heard, the Conservation Caucus does support the FHAM and PHB approach provided by the Westside Tribes. We believe the approach is informed by the substantial investment in time and resources by the technical reps of all caucuses, the scientific literature, and the conclusions and analyses of the PHB panel. To recap some of the highlights, the approach presumes fish habitat below a 10% floor in waters that are connected and accessible to type F streams. Compared to the current default physical criteria that are in rule now, which presumes fish presence downstream from 2 feet and 20%, this is a substantial compromise. While the primary intent of the 10% floor is to capture anadromous habitat, it's worth noting that data and our experience show that stream reaches at or below 10% that are connected to known type F waters are very likely to be used by multiple species of fish, including salmonids, but also sculpins and other species, during some time of the year, which brings us back to our definition of fish habitat in RAG 222-16-010. So we support the 10% floor because we don't feel like we should be electrofishing in reaches that we know are very likely to support fish. Above the 10% floor. The approach limits electrofishing to reaches above PHB features that are likely to be impediments to fish passage. And there, once the first fish is found, not the last fish, electrofishing stops until the next PHB is encountered. We believe that with appropriate training of surveyors and water type mod reviewers, we feel this approach is implementable, repeatable, and defensible. We do also see opportunities to clarify some pieces, for example, how and where to measure the abrupt inflection PHB, the 5% inflection, above that 10% floor. This approach uses electrofishing to identify type N waters that are not likely to be used by fish and reduces the current extent of electrofishing in a fair and balanced way. It reduces our reliance on a one-day survey to determine the extent of habitat used by fish at any time of the year and removes the need to find the last fish. This is critical because there are over 40,000 man-made barriers on type F waters in Washington State. We have depressed fish populations with reduced distribution, and the upper extent of fish distributions changes seasonally with flows. Put simply, because fish are mobile and often hard to sample, their use as a regulatory indicator has proven to be a challenge. Though in some ways not as protective of fish habitat as the current default physical criteria already in rule, which we understand will remain in rule as an alternative to the FAM, the Westside Tribes approach is a reasonable compromise that can be applied effectively and fairly while additional data are collected and analyzed through the ISPR vetted validation study. I have just a minute. I did want to dive into the weeds briefly on obstacles to make sure you all understood the difference in the Westside Tribe's approach to obstacle PHBs compared to the approach that was recommended in the PHB panel report. There are two types of obstacle criteria, vertical obstacles and non-vertical obstacles. This will sound familiar because I brought this up yesterday. I just want to make sure we got it. Vertical obstacles in the PHB panel's report were identified as a flat 3 foot, regardless of the size of the channel you're in. As I said yesterday, and I still believe today, there's good reason to scale that vertical criterion to channel width. And I believe the panel supports that decision. Unfortunately, it didn't make it into their report. And so the tribe's approach to the vertical obstacle criteria is that we use the greater of either 3 feet or one bankful width change in elevation. At the obstacle. So in a 3 foot channel, it would be a 3 foot obstacle that is required, vertical obstacle. In a 5 foot channel, it would be a 5 foot vertical obstacle, not a 3 foot vertical obstacle. Non-vertical obstacles, if you thought vertical obstacles were complicated, non-verticals are even more so. The panel's recommendation was for 20% over one bank for width change in elevation. The Westside Tribe's proposal is for 30% over an elevation change greater than or equal to two bankful widths, which is more of an impediment to fish passage. And so just to put that into perspective for you, the panel's recommendation of 20% for one bankful width change in elevation is a 20% gradient that may extend for 10 to 25 feet, depending on how wide the channel is that you're in. And for perspective, the Department of Fish and Wildlife's consideration of a gradient barrier requires 20% that extends for 525 feet. That's an impediment. That's a barrier to fish passage, according to the Department of Fish and Wildlife's fish passage manual. It's a big difference between 525 feet and 25 feet at 20%. Glad to answer any questions about that.
So, just to be clear, that Fish and Wildlife criteria is a barrier criteria, correct? Governor Davis, as opposed to an obstacle criteria, which is what the science panel was putting forward.
Correct. So, yeah, 20% over 525 feet, presuming a barrier, 20% over 25 feet, presuming an obstacle.
Right.
Correct.
Okay, good. You got it wrong. Thank you. Right.
Chair Bernath, members of the board, Ray Hintz with Kalispell Tribe and UCUT. Don't have a whole lot to add to earlier conversation that we had, but I think with the information provided by some of the tribal biologists on the west side, I think that for these unmapped low gradient streams, it's important to protect them in rural somehow. I think there is a opportunity to do that by having this 10% floor in place to protect those, because I think it's more important than just obviously to forest practices, but to the general welfare of those unmapped streams as they sit. So I think that there's a smart way to collaborate on language that would capture a protection of those really important unmapped streams. And one that the Eastside tribes fully support. I could give you 10 or 15 different methods or criteria to explore that may be better than what we all think we have here. But I think it's important to follow advice of experts. And we had a panel of experts gathered to give you that information, and they did. It's not perfect, as we heard. There are unmapped streams that are lost to this methodology. In those cases, I think it is important to protect those. But in the cases beyond those, in our map streams and the streams that we're experiencing the most of this, is we're applying criteria to look again and not end. This is not the end, this is the beginning and not the culmination. So yes, a 10% gradient threshold is not perfect, but if it's the place to look beyond, it's the place to look beyond. And I don't like to ignore the expert advice you've been given, and so protect the floor in those cases where it's important and unprotected now. But in the most case, and in the balance of the cases, I think you should follow the advice you've been given.
Thank you.
Ray, excuse me, a real quick question for you. Sorry, but I knew that we were going to get away. Some of the options include maybe not the top recommendations, but they're still pulled together from the analyses, and it's just they're still based on the data, but they're attempting to get at different aspects. Do you consider that ignoring the information we got from the science panel?
No, I think that they gave you options. Mm-hmm. There are not significantly different statistical ways to bifurcate that information, those criteria. If you selected 15% and 3 feet on the east side, I believe it is, no, you're not ignoring their recommendation. I think that you would be accepting. The reason why we've given our proposal is to follow the top fit. It's the top fit. It's the best fit to the scientific analysis that was done with the data. And that's just kind of simple as that. And as an example, we just finished a stream eradication on brook trout in a headwater stream above a permanent natural barrier. So fish above a permanent natural barrier. We know the full extent of fish habitat in that stream. It was 60% mistyped as N. So that's an example of what we face on the east side. The streams we're talking about were not 2 feet. They were tiny. So this 2 foot criteria just tells us we gotta look above it. That's why I'm saying it's not the end, it's the beginning.
Thank you. Peter Goldman and Chris Mendoza, please.
Good
morning, board members and Chair Bernath. I'm Peter Baldwin of the Washington Forest Law Center, working with the Conservation Caucus. I'd like to comment on three aspects of what's before the board today. First, as well stated by my colleague, Mary Skurlock, our caucus is urging the board to advance the Western Washington Tribal Alternative, the alternative that best meets the general goals and specific objectives of scientifically identifying potential fish. Second, we're urging the board, we want to remind the board that the Western Washington Tribal Alternative should not be viewed as just an opening offer. It is, in fact, a heavily compromised, very fair and reasonable end point, and should not be the beginning of a negotiation. There have been major concessions. And third, I'd like to address some of the issues facing the board as far as advancing multiple alternatives in tandem in the rulemaking process. I'm going to skip a lot of the technical details because my colleagues are much better at that. But to sum up, we think it's the best alternative for which there's a consensus of support. It's the only alternative that does contain this 10% floor concept. And without this 10% floor, to use a 5% inflection point would be biologically inadequate. And it's really the only proposal that conservatively identifies the fish barriers and obstacles. I'd like to take a step back and look at the big picture here. It's not just a set of potential rules that are in front of you right here. I'd like the board to be cognizant of how much has been conceded to this point. We are essentially grandfathering in all the fish breakpoints from previous water type modification forms all over the state. So think about it. What happens if a stream that's previously type N via water type modification form would be considered F under some new revised water typing rule that this board adopts? Nothing. The breakpoint remains the same. And many landowners have surveyed most of their lands, and a lot of these points would be grandfathered in. We're not doing anything about those points. So let's please give our side credit for conceding that all the points that are out there on the ground right now shall remain potentially type N when they could potentially be type F under a new protocol. That's really important. The PHB is the second concession. The PHB method is potentially much less protective than the use of a statewide physical default as those defaults exist today. And it's really important that we have recognized, our caucus and the West Side Tribes and East Side, have recognized the role for the survey protocol. But we want to responsibly limit its use to ensure the process is not being used to downgrade potential fish habitat. So I think it is really important that we agree that a statewide default, one size fits all, might not work everywhere. We understand that we're not going to use a model. Nothing's better than taking a close look. So we have made a very large concession by agreeing to the protocol. We just want to make sure it's a protective one and one that recognizes. And so we've also not asked the board to adopt the new default or go down that route, where we're going to split the difference and, you know, use a one-size-fits-all. So we're not requesting an emergency rule. And the 2018 field season will be unaffected by this. So we have a whole nother season to downgrade, potentially leading to an avalanche of forest practice applications in places where could be type F a year from now, or 2 years from now, or whatever. So the point is that there's going to be a lot of grandfathering and a lot of getting in under the, you know, just before the rules change situation that we haven't addressed here. So that is, in our view, a major concession. We understand that the board is considering advancing 2 to 3 alternatives today. And the rationale for doing that is, we understand if the board does that today, we urge the board to clearly identify the Western Washington Tribal Alternative, the one for which there's the most consensus on, as the preferred alternative because it does strengthen the obstacles and provides the basic protections for the floor. We do understand that the Administrative Procedure Act, APA, requires the board to consider potentially less onerous alternatives that meet the rules, specific goals, and objectives. And that's RCW 3405328, and your learned council may or may not brief you on that. We certainly understand that the board can consider such alternatives at the CR 102 stage, that's June 2018, or at the time it decides on adoption of the final alternative. But that does not mean that the board today needs to select that alternative as one that could meet the goals and objectives of a credible water typing rule. In other words, if you are going to kick the can down the road with three alternatives, we urge the board to provide a sense that it is which of the ones it feels best meets the goals and objectives of what we're trying to do here, and not sort of suggest that all three can. And that's because we have put in a lot of work as groups to come together around one, and we have essentially the most cockeyed on our behind the Western Washington Tribal One. It doesn't jeopardize the 3405328 analysis to do that. We don't believe the others do meet the goal. The WFPA alternative does meet the goals and objectives of the rule, and we're concerned that if the board advances all three, that it's somehow implicitly finding today that it meets those goals and objectives, when the board might not have that information in front of it now, but DNR will assemble that in the months ahead. So in closing, this has gone on for 8 years. The taxpayers, this isn't just for conservation, this isn't just for fish. The taxpayers have invested $3 million a year in this program. They expect this program to advise the board on what is best science and how does that move. We've got policy meetings around the state, dozens of them, field trips, multiple board meetings. And it's been 13 years since the board essentially abandoned the electronic water type model in 2005. As I said yesterday, it really is time for the board to act. This program is unique in the country, and I'm really proud that it's working, that we finally got to this point. And I urge the board to continue moving forward with this, but let's just try to reward groups that have come together around a scientifically credible proposal and respect their judgment. Thank you.
Chris.
Thank you, Peter. And and board members, for the record, I'm Chris Mendoza. I was here yesterday and many times before that. Today I wanted to focus on, I had testimony written, but I think most of my colleagues have covered it. So I wanted to just tell a short example, give you a short example of the anadromous floor under the commission's proposal for Westside. Board member Davis earlier mentioned that he was a habitat bio 78 years ago, maybe just double that at my age, probably more like 10, 12, 17 years ago. There you go, they're about double. And anyway, back then I was doing a lot of e-fishing protocol surveys for industrial, non-industrial landowners. This one was particularly a small course landowner. And we got out and wrapped up an alternate plan and surveyed in some of those lowland areas. And we found coho up to the base of a vertical, what you call a vertical barrier. Juvenile coho had resident fish, cutthroat trout, even lamprey. And since the board had been working on adopting a long-term alternate plan, they actually planned a field trip out. And so we've gone out the following year and surveyed that system, and everything led up to the barrier. We didn't find anything above it for at least a quarter mile, which is the existing protocol survey. And when the board was out there, you know, having picked that as an example, I went out, I think it was a week before, just to kind of set things up. Went to that same spot, and above the barrier, there were juvenile coho. And we hadn't found it a year prior. And so the point here is that we had to, of course, redo everything in a very short time above that barrier. But the point here is being that the distribution of juvenile coho can really fluctuate depending on stocking levels, for one. And so you can actually end up surveying a system that's underseeded. In other words, those fish, there's just not enough of them to fully seed a watershed, and they will not be present. In this case, there are a few pairs that actually breached that barrier and made it up there to spawn. Year prior to that, there weren't enough fish to make it up that far. So anyway, I think that the tribal proposal before you that speaks to vertical barriers, non-vertical barriers, and they are moving to keep those up a bit based on the gillery fish presence, but also to consider the fact that, one, there may not be a lot of fish in these systems at the time they're surveyed. And so the floor makes a lot of sense in that perspective. And particularly when it comes to historic run size. And also concur with the Westside Tribes, the channel width is really irrelevant when it comes to juvenile cutout. I mean, those that have worked in the ag industry know that those fish will go up a garden hose if you leave it out there. So I think that the channel width barrier criteria are pretty much useless below 10 feet. Thank you for your time.
10%.
10%. Sorry. I said 10%. Yeah. It's nothing that comes with it.
But I just thought you were trying to confuse me.
Again. No. Too many tens in this.
Thank you for your order and carry on.
Thank you to the board and the chair, Bernath, for taking my testimony today. My name is Ariane Jaco, and I work for Washington Environmental Council on the Evergreen Forest Program. WEC recognizes the long and arduous process that has led the board and all the stakeholders involved in addressing stream typing through the adaptive management program to this point. We congratulate you on the work you have accomplished so far and for your continued attention to a complex issue that has remained unresolved for too long. My message today will be very high level. WEC and the Conservation Caucus is pleased to recommend that the board adopt the Westside Tribe's potential habitat grade proposal. This proposal builds on alternatives tested by the science panel, but makes important improvements that will ensure electrofishing protocols are not used in areas that should be deemed to be fish-bearing, and that obstacle definitions are strong enough to achieve the board's objectives. In supporting this alternative, we recognize the tribe's leadership in crafting their proposal, their profound connection to the state's freshwater resources, and their status as co-managers of the resource. We urge you to forward the tribal proposal to formal rulemaking today. The Westside Tribe's proposal represents substantial stakeholder collaboration and compromise and should not be perceived as a negotiating position for the Conservation Caucus. We believe this proposal strikes an appropriate balance of competing stakeholder concerns, but it is not as conservative as my caucus would prefer. This proposal integrates landowners' concerns about relying on physical stream habitat characteristics with the board's mandate to minimize electrofishing surveys and reliance on fish presence and absent determinations. We are, however, open to clarification or additions to the proposal that provide further assurances that likely fish habitat will not be needlessly subjected to electrofishing surveys. The obstacle definitions are reasonable improvements to the ones proposed by the panel that comport with expert judgment. We strongly urge you to forward as few alternatives as possible for rule analysis, preferably only one.
Good morning, Chair Bernath and members of the Forest Practices Board. Again, my name is Karen Tuliger for the record, and I work for the Washington Forest Protection Association as a senior forester. I first of all wanted to just say Happy Valentine's Day. I think we kind of got into the discussion of water typing pretty early, but remember that it is a holiday. As you've heard, WFPA supports the board's identification of several alternatives to be assessed for benefits, costs, and accuracy considerations. Those are required under the Administrative Procedures Act, and you're also required to figure out if those water typing system elements meet the forest and fish and HCP objectives. We've talked specifically about the alternative that has been recommended by the board, and I'm open to questions if you have any, but if not, I'll just go on to say a few more comments. One, the Fish Habitat Technical Group, as technical experts, we believe should be very significantly involved in this discussion and could possibly provide the oversight for the next set of analyses that go forward. Remember that the potential habitat breaks are starting points in the protocol survey or the new type of survey, which is the fish habitat assessment methodology. And we believe that the proposal that we put forward reasonably meets those objectives.
However, one thing that is important in this discussion of rulemaking is that it is going to be a new permanent rule. And therefore, the board needs to understand the implications of those options. Just to remind you from my testimony yesterday, from the BIOPS from Multi-Use Fish and Wildlife Service and NIMS, quotes that basically say, it is assumed that any methods used to map or delineate such waters, and those are fish-bearing waters, or have an approximately equal probability of identifying waters as fish-bearing where fish do not actually occur, or the reverse, identifying waters as non-fish-bearing where fish actually do occur. I agree very strongly with one of the statements that Mr. Goldman made yesterday, that we're trying to identify what an accurate water typing system would look like. And in order to do that, we need to have the analysis of different options. The Administrative Procedures Act here in Washington State includes an assessment of costs, benefits, impact to small businesses, and it states specifically, after considering alternate versions of the rule and the analysis, that the rule being adopted is the least burdensome alternative to the regulated community. And that that's the least burdensome alternative that meets the general objectives and specific goals. Well, how does the board know whether or not a particular alternative meets the general objectives and specific goals without doing the alternatives analyses that we've identified? I talked a little bit this morning in terms of the questions about the analysis and the data that was in the science report. We have great sympathy with the science report's difficulty in mining those water type modification forms, but just realize that those forms were not designed to provide the stringency in the study that the validation study will in the future. Fish habitat is described in general terms by the definition in the Forest Practices Act, which says that it is habitat used by fish or likely to be used by fish. These analyses will help the board understand what is likely to be used by fish. WFPA has also conducted, and we've incorporated into our proposal, additional analyses of the PHB alternatives that recognize the board's need to understand accuracy and error allocation in the decision-making process. The fish habitat assessment methodology, or as we are fondly calling it now, the FCAM, clarification in this new permanent rule is a framework to provide consistency and reproducibility for protocol field surveys. But it is not a framework for renegotiating the core elements of the Habitat Conservation Plan or the Forest and Fish Report. WFPA and member companies are committed to supporting the completion of these supplemental analyses, including the spatial analysis of potential PHP alternatives, which would include multi-stakeholder representation and oversight to refine and more fully develop recommendations that includes specific numeric criteria in time for use in the 2019 field season. So we're committed to the process moving forward. Identification of alternatives is something that is anticipated and actually very helpful under the APA moving forward. Today you've seen, and yesterday you've seen, how committed WFPA and member companies are. You've seen foresters, water typing experts, some of our scientists, one of our economists, company officials, and policy staff all discuss these very important issues with you today. We are also committed to working with the tribes and others that are dealing with issues related to development and low gradient streams. And this may not be the appropriate forum to do that, but we are committed to working with them on those issues. Forest and Fish was supposed to be part of actually one chapter of a larger salmon recovery plan that was called Extinction is Not an Option. And the forestry module of that has done very well in terms of providing and maintaining additional support for salmon recovery. We feel that other areas in Washington State also need to take advantage of that model and move forward. So with that, thank you for your time, and we really appreciate your deliberation.
Thank you. That's the end of public comment. I'd like to take a couple-minute break. And if others want to caucus, feel free to do that.